Good morning and welcome to another edition of Living Better in San Diego, a public service presentation of the Entercom San Diego radio stations. I'm Gary Lee. Genesis Healthcare Partners is San Diego's largest premier multi-specialty physician practice, consisting of a team of medical professionals that provide access to cutting-edge technology and minimally invasive treatments. Joining us this morning is Genesis Healthcare Partners board-certified general surgeon, Dr. Pamela Kurtzals. Welcome, Pam.
Good morning, Gary.
Nice to have you on the show. I'm glad you could make it this morning. You are with Genesis Healthcare Partners. How about a little, maybe a quick overview of the organization, if you would?
Sure. So Genesis actually has been around for quite some time. They actually are a group that before was named RMG, so most people are familiar with them, which was Radiation Medical Group in San Diego, and had service facilities from north to south. And then they joined kind of hands with physicians and specialists, mostly urologists, and 9 years ago, and now they've branched out to about 36 physicians from urology to GI and to now surgery in terms of breast surgery. So to a degree, it's a multidisciplinary specialty group that works in a facet of all facilities, not
okay.
Hospitals.
I do remember RMG.
Mm-hmm. Most people remember RMG.
So it's kind of like it's an offshoot then.
It's an offshoot of RMG.
Of RMG.
In the sense that they're trying to kind of, if you consider, it's the last of its kind in the sense that they're not really taken by one hospital versus another. They're actually still independent group of physicians that work together at all the different places.
I see. And how long have you been with Genesis?
So I was with Scripps Clinic for quite some time, since 2003, and then in August of 2018, I kind of moved over to the helm of Genesis to try to branch out to the south side and work in the kind of Hillcrest area and start kind of a breast practice there.
Have you always been a surgeon?
So always been a surgeon. So in our world, we don't do too much changing on that one, too much training going into it.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
Always been a surgeon. And I trained in Chicago, then came out this way in 2001 and then to San Diego in 2003.
How long have you been practicing?
So since 2001, and breast has been my basically 99% of my practice, if not 100%, for about 16 to 17 years.
So this has been pretty much, because you are, your expertise
my
is
expertise,
in
right. All I know maybe
cancer.
At this point.
Yeah. And benign disorders too?
So benign disorders and high risk disorders. So patients who don't have cancer but have difficulties in their breast exams or difficulties with their films. And of course, benign disorders and then cancer. So to a degree, most people who specialize in breasts are going to see a spectrum rather than just one thing.
Now I've had other people on the show before talking about breast cancer, but I think this is the first time I've actually had a doctor on.
Oh, okay.
Talking
okay.
about it. So be interested.
Maybe a medical oncologist.
So
better.
I'm interested to get your take, your perspective, mm-hmm. your insights on breast cancer today. So this
my
I'm looking
see
forward
what I can
to
do
this.
To help.
All right. So let's start with basics when it comes to cancer. Can you give us just maybe a layman's overview of cancer itself?
Unfortunately, you know, cancer in and of itself is, if you look at it, just basically, it's a cell that is kind of growing without control. So in everything about our bodies has a meaning and a purpose. And when a cell decides to grow out of control, it's basically not being contained. That's really to a degree what cancer is. As we face where we're at in society, and especially Western civilization, I mean, we're really predicting that, you know, probably by the time we hit into our, you know, mid-80s, if we all live that long, we're going to probably most men, 1 in 2 men are going to have some form of cancer, whether it be skin cancer, prostate cancer, and about 1 in 3 women. So cancer is, I think, amongst us. I mean, we're all having to learn how to focus on preventative care,
right?
Really, rather than acute care. And that's really the focus of the nation. If not, it should be individually.
Talking about breast cancer now,
mm-hmm.
breast cancer, not only women get
correct,
breast
not
cancer.
Only women. I mean, for every, you know, it's for every 100 women diagnosed with breast cancer, there'll be one male. And for most men with breast cancer, it's usually genetic. You know, it's definitely a genetic component. But we do see them, and I would probably see anywhere between 3 to 5 men a year in my practice. And that's if I'm seeing 400 cancers a year, I'm seeing 3 to 5 men. So it kind of fits into that number range. Men get found, and they have the same survival. They have the same treatment. They have the same recommendations to a degree, and so it doesn't mean that it's going to convey a worse benefit or a worse, you know, outcome for them by having breast cancer. They just have to be cognizant and find it and see their doctor, just like women.
And as the case is the case with many things, the earlier
the better,
better. Mm-hmm. Right?
Of course, rather than writing it off, right? And that's kind of unfortunately what we find. What we all want to do. It's easier to put our head in the sand sometimes than it's than to face kind of the
face reality.
Yeah. Yeah. No one wants to do that, especially at the holidays.
That's right. So let's if we could, real quickly, talk about maybe some of the signs or symptoms, mm-hmm. things that people can look for when it comes to breast cancer.
Well, it's funny. You mean breast cancer is just, I think, to a degree, probably like prostate cancer. I mean, it's important to kind of continue to do your screening. For men, it's going to be their exams. For women, it's going to be their mammograms. But there is still so much to be had for women to be, you know, aware of themselves and the changes that they see externally. I think, unfortunately, women, kind of as we get older and we see our bodies changing, we don't have a tendency to like how maybe we look, and we don't look at ourselves the same way. And it's important that we look and we feel and we examine ourselves, you know, whether it be once a month, whether it be you do it every week. But the goal is to do something consistently because you know your body better. So for men, you know, if they're noticing a change in their urinary habits and those kind of situations, well, that's probably going to lead to something going on with the prostate. For women, if they're going to see a change in their size of the breast, they're going to feel a lump, they're going to see a dimpling, you know, discharge from their nipple, those are signs and symptoms that something is going on. Not always cancer, but something is going on. But more importantly, preventative. Make sure you get those mammograms. If your doctor forgot to order it to you that year, make sure you tell your doctor, you forgot, I hadn't gotten it for 2 years. We really need to be on. Kind of, we have to be the agent on top of us for our health care, not just the doctors ordering the stuff.
And that's something what you mentioned about, we know our bodies actually more than our doctors, mm-hmm. more than anybody. And, mm-hmm. and that's what we've discussed in the past when we've discussed prostate cancer, breast cancer right. on the show. And that is, if you see anything that is not normal for you,
that you feel is new.
Right, then you need to.
As I tell my patients when they come in and they say, you know, my doctor sent me here because they felt something. I'm like, well, what do you feel? Because you know your body better than your doctor. Your body, you know, your doctor touched you once this year. Well, you should be touching right. yourself more than that in the sense of doing your exams and looking at yourself and being right. aware. Even externally, if you didn't even want to do your breast exam, just looking at yourself externally in a mirror, which we have a tendency we're going to be critical ourselves, it's not critical. You're there looking to see if you notice changes because sometimes it's amazing what you can see if you just look.
And so the signs and symptoms and things that you look for are different for men and women?
Well, for men, it's usually they present with, you know, all of a sudden they're going to usually run into it. They have, whether they're, it's always attributed to a sports game, I think. Either they're playing some sport or they're watching a game and they set their beer on their chest or something hits them on their chest and they notice something hurts and they notice a lump. And so most men won't observe it for very long because it's so much easier to see and if not feel, because of course their, you know, their breast tissue is much more minimal compared to women. For women, they're going to notice if their breast changes size. Is there redness that wasn't there before? Is it dimpling? There's something coming out of my nipple that never was coming out of my nipple. Those are subtle changes that are going to be, look, you need to, don't wait 3-4 months, even though you have an appointment come February. And don't worry about that deductible part. See yeah. your physician.
Don't wait to see if it's going to continue
yeah,
for 3-4 weeks. Right?
After 4 weeks, we need to, if it's not changed, you need to be being seen by somebody. Right. And that's really what the goal is. And be on top of making sure you get your films. You know, a lot of women kind of write off getting that mammogram because it's not any fun. But it's, you know, it really has helped diagnose things.
So let's yeah. let's talk about risk factors. A lot of risk factors involved with. Now, are risk factors different for different cancers?
Right. So kind of think if you're going to look at the general risk factors, I'm going to throw back that most breast cancers don't always present with any symptoms. So that's where the mammograms come in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe for men, that's what checking their PSA, their blood
right.
level is. That's why they check it. So, you know, you didn't have any symptoms, and wow, you tell me I have a cancer. How can that be? Because they can be very small. So for a lot of people, we don't have any symptoms. But what we do know is that certain people are going to have more risk factors. So to a degree, kind of, we're going to put that out there, alcohol. This is the time of year that we all have a tendency to indulge a little mm-hmm. bit more. And with the new year coming up, you know, what is alcohol? We kind of make sense in our head that alcohol is related to liver cancer, mm-hmm. you know, excessive use and things like that. You know, a lot of people don't really know, but maybe they kind of can't remember that it's associated with head and neck cancers, especially if a person smokes and they drink. High incidence with throat cancers, those kind of things. We also know that it's associated with, unfortunately, we can see to a degree, breast cancer is another big association and has been a tie-in with the use of alcohol. And for a long time, no one knew how much. Well, if I drink wine, because some wine's good. Mm-hmm. You know, isn't it kind of good for us? Well, how much alcohol should I drink? What if I don't drink, I drink a beer? What if I drink hard liquor? Is all alcohol bad? It's really, and it's kind of not about, to a degree, what you're drinking. It's how much you're drinking. And so, to a degree, alcohol is kind of what we call a carcinogen. It kind of, unfortunately, it breaks down to a product that really is toxic to us, acetaldehyde. And that's really a toxic substance for our body. So the more you drink, the more your body's dealing with the toxin that unfortunately kind of leads itself to kind of allowing cancer cells to develop. So unfortunately for women, you know, no one's ever going to tell them, don't drink alcohol, you can't do this. No one lives that way. You can't live by all those extremes. You got to live in moderation. But we do know that more than two drinks a day is really increasing your risk of breast cancer development, especially when you're older, over, you know, past menopause, no matter what you drink.
Oh, okay, that's what
No matter whether it's beer, you know, to agree, kind of think that probably beer is going to be your, what do you consider a serving size nowadays? I mean, look what our serving sizes have changed.
Yeah, huge.
Huge. So serving sizes for a glass of wine is 4 or 5 ounces. For a liquor, it's 1.5. I mean, that's not a very, that's a shot.
Right.
So think if you had two, you have a martini every night or two, you're probably hitting past that serving size pretty quickly. So something to kind of think, and binge drinking is even worse. So, you know, kind of saving it up all the week, say, oh, well, if I say I have one a day, I'll do it all the weekend, having seven that day. That's not really any better, if not even worse for you, because you think you're loading your body with all of those toxins all at once. So it's more than just liver cancer. But in the scheme of things, when you look at risk factors, alcohol is a small part. I mean, other, you know, factors go into genetics, your family history. Another big factor is going to be the use of what we call the kind of extra hormones into our body. Unfortunately, lots of things with hormones in it, especially as we age, we have a tendency to kind of add things in terms of medicine and treatments. And then the other one is going to be kind of our overall, our weight and our diet.
So let's talk about that, because that's something that you're kind of looking at
concerns
in a new
all
way
of us.
Now, right?
Right, right. And it really kind of concerns all of us, especially as we go upon a year where it's easy to gain 2, 3, 4, or 5 pounds. And, you know, come January, we're all willing to buy the gym and we're all willing to join Weight Watchers.
For a month.
And we all love it. Yeah. But what exactly? You know, we've kind of come a long way with it. We've known for a long time obesity. And how we define obesity is was standard. It was kind of looking at your height and looking at your weight and providing you kind of a number. And said so you had to be within this kind of range. So, of course, if you were shorter and you were heavier, you kind of unfortunately got challenged with obesity pretty quickly. Well, it's more than just the scale is what we're finding out. But obesity associated with, unfortunately, one of the biggest things that's not a cancer, though, but is kind of to a degree diabetes as we get older. Fat, unfortunately, doesn't have the ability to kind of deal with the insulin in our system, and we can't make enough to help with all that fat. And we have a tendency, the heavier you get as you get older, I mean, outside of heart disease, outside of high cholesterol, you're dealing with a lot of diabetes. So from a standpoint of cancer, I mean, weight, just any extra fat to our system is really a hard thing to deal with. And unfortunately, what we know with breast cancer is not so much when we're younger that weight makes a big role. And actually, they're kind of seeing it to be, if not protective. But as we get older, and for women, it's around menopause. It's hard to keep our weight adjusted, change in our metabolism. That increased weight is a huge factor to kind of increasing your risk of breast cancer development, and if not decreasing your chance of doing well after you've been diagnosed. So more than just fat, it's also about your muscle mass. So men kind of have a tendency to do better when it comes to muscle than what women do. But to a degree, we used to tell people, lose that 20 pounds, lose that 30 pounds. You know, doctors always kind of harp to you about that stuff. Really, what you should be saying is that you need to be outside. You need to be walking. You need to be doing some form of exercise per week. It's getting people out again and kind of following a little bit portion control.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, portion control, moderation.
Moderation. You know, no one's going to tell you. I mean, I've never told my patients not to drink as much as I think we never do good with nevers. You know, it's like saying I can't do something. Can'ts don't do well. I mean, it's a kind of defeatist attitude. But, you know, you got to watch what you're doing. You know, if you know you're going to drink, if you drink a lot of alcohol, especially if you're having that drink, keep in mind those are empty calories. You know, watch the alcohol you're drinking. Try to choose a lower caloric choice. I mean, they have so many of these options nowadays.
Right.
These skinny things and that and this. But don't take the leftovers home. Portion out the leftovers. Try to make sure you eat the little bit of the greens and kind of think. I always look back to where my grandparents grew up. I mean, when we ate meals that were so much balanced and we were always outside, we had a tendency to live longer, tendency to be in better weight, and really our muscle mass was better. And you fare better that way.
So to build that muscle mass?
Build that muscle mass is really resistance training. And for, you know, what we recommend is that kind of, you know, think of a little over two hours a week of any form of moderate exercise. And, you know, as I tell women, just go out and walk. And how women can increase their resistance if they say, well, I don't want to buy weights or I don't want to do the things. You know what? Go to Target, go to Walmart, buy those silly little weight belts you can put on your ankles, you put on your back. You know, having even 2, 3 pounds, you know, a couple pounds when you're doing that walking, or even if you're going to go shopping, put on that weight because it's going to increase your bone strength, which increases your muscle mass. For women, it's kind of funny. Breast cancer, every breast cancer patient has low vitamin D levels. Vitamin D is an antioxidant. If you don't drink a lot of milk, you know, as you get into adulthood, you don't bring in a lot of good vitamin D. Unfortunately, the more you drink, we don't absorb some vitamins. Vitamin D is one of them. And to a degree, the more heavier you are, you also are not absorbing that vitamin D. Muscle helps you absorb that vitamin D. So that's kind of its own natural antioxidant. So kind of think it's you can minimize osteoporosis by increasing your muscle mass. You increase the strength of your bones. You're also protecting yourself from, really, to a degree, some cancers.
So increasing that muscle mass will help you in many ways.
Great if you can be the bodybuilder type. But maybe what you should be telling your doctor, well, okay, I need to get to the gym, but maybe it might be worth trying to join that gym and looking and say, you know what, I don't know, maybe I just need someone to tell me how to increase my muscle mass. Maybe it's worth that trainer for one session. Because if you don't exactly know what to do, I mean, even if you just get out or you just do push-ups or you just kind of, to a degree, go carry your grandkid around for a couple times for that day. I mean, get out there shopping. Carry your groceries from the car back and forth. Small things that you did daily make a difference.
Huh.
Keeping your tone. As you know, for people who've done well in life and increase keeping their overall moderate, you know, maintaining their weight, we're all going to fluctuate, but in keeping our tone so that we don't have more fat to muscle, really we fare better from lots of things.
Yeah, see, I've got to work on that muscle mass.
We all do.
Because my doctor told me to lose weight earlier this year, and I've lost 35 pounds. But
we don't always gain muscle from that. We're
right.
Just losing fat.
Yeah,
right.
So I need to
And so
figure
out how to
do that.
The simplest way, as I tell people, you know, you don't need, whether it be 2-3 pound weights and just doing, a, you know, you're not looking to look like you're going to be Popeye. But so as I tell my female patients, look, I just want you maintaining tone. Because by increasing your tone, you improve your bones, you improve your vitamin D. I mean, it's kind of one of those, it's a trickle effect that's domino and from one thing to the other, as we all know, right? We all should be out probably walking more and probably trying to carry our groceries and trying to, like I always think I should be walking down the stairs. You know, I should be walking upstairs, walking down the stairs. I should be parking not at the first parking spot that's closest to the place I want to go to and try to park.
I have changed those things.
Yeah. Parking the farthest away because it's increasing my walking.
Yeah.
And then trying to learn how to increase my heart rate. Well, I can do it by just walking alone. Or maybe, hey, I have that dog. You know what? I'm going to go get out there with the dog. I mean, little things you can do, if you just did it daily, make a difference.
Right, do it on a regular basis.
If you live 3 blocks from the school, walk your kids to school. Those are little small things that make a difference.
Are risk factors for breast cancer in younger women not the same as for older women?
They're not exactly the same. And a lot of it is what we do know for breast cancer for women. One of the things that we're seeing is that it's how long they've been exposed to estrogen. So how long is a woman menstruating, having their cycles? One of the big trends has been because, our children are a little bit heavier, which is why the huge push to try to get our children to eat better and watching what they're eating at school and all of that good stuff, is that we know that they're getting heavier at a younger age in puberty, and so girls are starting to menstruate much earlier. The downside about starting to menstruate early, I mean, a lot of it is due to weight. The heavier you are when you're younger, you're going to start to menstruate sooner because fat, unfortunately, makes estrogen. So it's got a lot of estrogen overload. You know, if I'm going from now 10 years old and I'm not going to have menopause and stop menstruating until like 50, I have 40 years of estrogen exposure compared to maybe if I was 14 or 15. Some countries, some areas in China, the women don't start menstruating until 16, 17. You know, they have very lean, you know, very low body fat. They're kind of lean, good, you know, they have a lot of muscle mass and they're lean. You know, they have a tendency, if they're going to stop menstruating in their late 40s, early 50s, they've had less exposure to that overall estrogen. So we know that's one of the things that, you know, for younger women, fat doesn't play a huge role. What we do know is that, well, to a degree, it's when you hit menopause that fat really becomes a problem because now it's hard to lose if my metabolism goes down. So there is some different little bit of risk factors, but really, you know, we know not having children. Well, what conveyed the benefit of having children, what really conveyed it was the fact that you didn't have a period. So it's really all about that estrogen exposure. And you can't change genetics. I mean, to a degree, parents are who your parents are. So we can't change that for people, whether you're younger or older. What we also can change, though, is awareness. And to a degree, your habits, your eating habits, your exercise habits. We know that all goes into it, your drinking habits. And also how much you're cognizant about your own health care. Do you know, I mean, I look at my mother and my father who were in their 80s, and my father's passed, but, you know, they weren't really a generation that really were always going to the doctors.
No,
they didn't really do those things. And they felt fine, they stayed away. Well, there's something to be said about preventative stuff. I mean, that's kind of where we probably have a better generation for it.
Yeah. How are we doing on the research front when it comes to breast cancer?
We're making a lot of headway. I mean, we really have come, when you kind of think of these from surgery, since that's my specialty, I mean, we went from an era where everybody had a mastectomy. I mean, everyone had, if not an aggressive, you know, removal of the breast and tissue and all these lymph nodes, and deforming and defiguring and horrible, painful. We've kind of come to, during breast conservation, to taking out small, small lesions, and, you know, patients have so many more options. Radiation has changed. It used to be one form of radiation as a treatment for the breast cancer. Now there's several forms of radiation, some of them done in the at the time of the operation. It's amazing what we have done. And the use of medicines to control, kind of to degree, the incidence of it and afterwards. Changing medicines, learning new ways to kind of get at things, and to degree, learning how to biologically control the tumor is where our focus is. Kind of think, we can't just cut things out. We can't just get rid of them and put the Band-Aid over it. At some point, we have to learn about the tumor and biologically get it to, until we can manipulate it and treat it. I mean, that's the forefront of where we're trying to go.
So a lot of progress has been made.
Mm-hmm. Breast cancer is hugely researched, and I think in that sense, that's probably the best thing. Women, if you're facing a diagnosis, you're in a very heavily researched cancer that is constantly changing, which is why a lot of women seeing breast specialists and oncologists and surgeons and radiation doctors who only specialize in that, because it's always changing. I mean, just where we were with prostate cancer. I mean, prostate cancer was treated with a radical surgery when you look back 15, 20 years ago. Now they have the robotic surgery. They have treatments where patients don't even have surgery. I mean, it's amazing where it's come.
So are there cases with breast cancer, the same thing, where it's not always necessary surgery?
So they've done some trials of looking, but we're not exactly there yet, but we're not going to remove the overall focus. But there has been trials to look at it, depending on the age of the patient, you know, can we control the tumor with your use of medicines rather than having to do surgery? But think of surgery as being, I'm trying to take surgery from where it was so long and hard and painful to make this as easy as going in and out and you're done in 3 hours. Treatment has changed to that degree of not everybody's getting chemotherapy. Chemotherapy, if needed, is very well targeted. Most women, really is breast conservation. It's not taking off the whole breast. I mean, it's about treating the tumor from its roots. You know, we've not gotten to the point where we're going to say we don't ever need surgery, because we always like to take the weed out of the garden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's benefit for that. But there's going to be instances where we have way more options than where we were even 10 years ago. We used to take out women's lymph nodes and be very aggressive at those for the evaluation of their cancer. And if it spread, nowadays, if we're sampling lymph nodes, it's a sample. It's nothing what we were doing when I had started training back in, the late 1990s. So kind of think in that generation alone, we've changed drastically.
And I noticed that too, because I've had some folks on that we talked about lung cancer, and that's changed too. My father had lung cancer and had his lung removed, but they don't do that anymore.
My mother had lung cancer and didn't have surgery, and she had radiation and chemotherapy, and she's an 8-year survivor, and she wasn't predicted to live 3 years, and it's amazing. I mean, it's amazing where we've come. She had a 10-centimeter tumor in her chest. So, look at smoking. I mean, I think we have a better generation understanding vaping and smoking and all these things, and that's another huge risk factor that we know of. And I give credit. There's a group called the Women's Health Initiative, which was basically it was a group of nurses, and this research, and this has continued. It's over 20 some years old now. And what they looked at was basically it was from the nursing data, and they kind of followed women diagnosed with breast cancer, and then they followed women looking at taking hormones after menopause, what kind of hormones, birth control, and this study is still kind of going on. I mean, their data that they have published over 20-some years is impressive in terms of following women and looking at these changes to kind of tell us what hormones did for us and what some of these things that we were doing, what they thought was the miracle cure to make us feel young and look young. Well, like anything, it can all have a teeter-totter effect and come back to bite you. And to a degree, they changed kind of the use of hormones and all that stuff after menopause. In 2004, when their data came out, the prescription, it was 50-some million prescriptions were written in the United States. 2003. 2004, when that data came out, it dropped drastically by over 50%. I mean, think that's research is constantly continuing to move to change things.
And it has to.
Right.
Yeah.
In all cancers.
Right.
I sometimes wish that we focus as much energy into things like the pediatric cancers and some other cancers that unfortunately are harder to kind of even treat. But we'll get there.
Yep. Eventually. Well, we are just about out of time, actually, pretty much out of time.
Sorry.
That's okay, but before we wrap up, any advice for somebody listening this morning that might think they have breast cancer or
I'm a supporter of the American Cancer Society. They have unbiased opinions and give patients information that is truly unbiased and just meant to educate them in very simple language. Whether you're scared or you're looking for the other opinion, remember, just think about even going to that website if you don't know where to go, because there's people you can call, they have a hotline, they have 24-hour support. And if all else fails, you know, remember, just you got to talk to your doctor and don't be afraid of trying to find the diagnosis either. Unfortunately, it just gets worse if we keep ignoring it.
Don't delay.
Get help. And it's okay. It's there. Thank you very much, Gary. I appreciate it.
Pam, thank you for being on the show today. Very enlightening, very informative. I appreciate it. And thanks for all you do at Genesis Healthcare Partners.
My pleasure.
That concludes another edition of Living Better in San Diego. The opinions expressed on Living Better in San Diego do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of the Entercom San Diego radio stations. Episodes of Living Better in San Diego are available on the station's website. Join me next week when my guest will be from Sharp Healthcare. Until then, I'm Gary Lee. Have a great week.